Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 29. TNG season 5, episode 18. Cause and effect.
Damage report!
Casualty reports coming in from all over the ship.
The starboard nacelle has sustained a direct impact. We are venting drive plasma.
Initiating emergency core shutdown.
Inertial damper is failing. We're losing attitude control.
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
Core shutdown is unsuccessful. We are losing antimatter containment.
We've got to eject the core.
Ejection systems offline. Core breach is imminent.
All hands abandon ship. Repeat. All hands abandon.
It all goes back to 8 bits and a byte. It's all, you know, because it's by
all
eight.
About that.
It is because it's divisible 8. I think C sharp uses 16-bit characters, but most of it's UTF-8, which is 8-bit characters. But C sharp.
So if there's 8 bits to a byte, how many bytes does it take to get to the center?
Of a Tootsie Pop?
No, just to the center.
Center.
Just to the center of the fucking reality?
That's a fucked up question, man.
The central void, yeah.
That's a fucked up question.
The central finite curve.
Oh, man. It's going to bum me out tonight.
All right. So what were you doing in 1992, circa March 23rd?
Why, I was sailing the ocean blue.
I don't believe you.
1992, I was 12. Kurt Cobain died somewhere around there.
Yeah, it was 94.
Was it 94?
Yeah.
Circa 92. What grade would we have been in?
Meh.
Meh. Sixth grade or something?
92.
There is a.
That's probably right, because I think I would have been about the eighth grade.
Oh, is there a reason for this question?
There's a reason.
Because that's when...
This is not... I don't have a...
That's when this episode came out?
I have a reputation. I have a reputation for tomfoolery, but not insanity. I'm not going to just ask you non sequitur questions. That's actually your role.
That's kind of your
dag. Dag.
No, we all got our places.
So
my place is to smoke a bunch of crack.
This episode,
just before the
this episode aired on March 23rd, first aired on March 23rd, 1992.
And because of that, we can surmise that Star Trek TNG debuted in 1988. Because you
no,
know,
it was 1987.
That's what I said anyways, though, because you want to know why?
Why?
Because this was season 5.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, the season. Never mind. No, I will mind. It breaks the year in half.
Yeah, so that's why I said 8. 7 and 8
this
really
is the 18th
means...
episode. This is like the second half.
Yeah, but that's why I said 1988. It's basically the same. And you correct me by saying 87, but I'm saying it's basically the same because they split the years in half.
I will agree that those years are basically the same.
I mean, in terms of this. Yeah. It's like the fiscal year is different than the year.
What's up
year.
With the fiscal year, guys?
When this episode came out, I think George Bush was still president.
He was. He did not leave office
it was prior
until
to the election.
January 1993. George H.W. Bush. George Herbert Walker
Herbert
Bush.
He was
always talking about 1,000 points of light or something.
No, he wasn't.
Talking about something.
He talked about that like once.
Yeah, that
and
was
then
one speech.
Dana Carvey incorporated that into his brilliant impersonation. Not gonna debt. 1,000 points of light.
I remember there was some kind of my mom had some can of like it was canned it was some kind of chip dip or something like that, some onion dip or something, and on the top it said something about 1,000 points of light, and it was a reference to George Bush, and it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, herzlich willkommen, meine Damen und Herren, zum dem It's Got Star Trek Podcast.
My name is Dan.
Heute, meine Kollegen Dan und Jesse.
I'm Dan.
Sprache nach dem Episode Cause und Effect.
Beta.
Bitte.
Beta. I'm not saying Beta. I'm saying Beta. That's Jesse's name is Beta.
Der Raumschiff Enterprise.
Why is that
don't correct my pronunciation.
Der Raumschiff
you
Enterprise.
Don't even know what I was saying.
Mit Captain Picard. It's got Star Trek. This is the podcast
like,
you're listening to.
It's like when I said, what was it that I said and that someone corrected me on it once?
Okay. All right. This is a... one time somebody corrected you on something.
I remember I said marzipan once, and my stepmom was like, marzipan. And I was like, okay.
Marzipan. All right, so we are discussing, Dan's got it right on the money. He got the years all wrong, but the right
no,
on the money.
No, the 88 and 87 is the same in Star Trek world.
It we're talking about Star Trek, The Next Generation,
sure
Season 5, Episode 18, Cause and Effect.
I have to, before I forget, so we have it on record, it was cauliflower. I said cauliflower, and someone I knew said cauliflower.
That's lame.
I think it's okay to say cauliflower.
Yeah.
I say cauliflower.
I think you can say that.
Do you say kalima?
No, I never say that. Oh. That seems, I don't know, I've never ever reason to say that. Cauliflower.
All right.
Cauliflower. I don't like to make the words all quick. You know, I like marzipan, cauliflower. Marzipan's a little bit of a stretch, but marzipan, cauliflower. You know, that's like, okay.
All right. So we've laid down, that's the foundation for the conversation.
Let your words speak. Give them their full resonance.
Thanks, Jesse.
So we're talking about Cause and Effect, which is a
subspace resonance.
Classic TNG episode. It shows up on a million and one different, best of Star Trek or best of Star Trek The Next Generation shows. It's also very often the an episode that people recommend. If you look at those lists where they say, you know, my wife or, you know, my partner, my friend, I want to get them into Star Trek. What should I show them? And a lot of times this is one of the episodes that's recommended. And do you think that's appropriate? I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
It's an episode that it doesn't have a lot of extra. It's all like the crew and they're on the ship and they're solving problems. And you don't, it doesn't have a lot. There's no like away mission. There's not a crazy alien. There's some guests at the very end, but for the most part, you know, it's just good old TNG sort of play. And come to think of it, that reminded me that, you know, TNG didn't always need to have, it seemed like in TOS, there's a lot of going down to a planet, that kind of stuff. And TNG, there isn't a lot of, they didn't always have to do that. Like there was people coming onto the ship, or there was just an adventure, just them on the ship. You didn't have any extra stuff. This is one of those.
Yeah. And it's pure, like sort of tech fun episode. I don't even know if that's the right description, but you know, there's no social commentary in this episode.
I 100% agree.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's what helps it. There's no moral.
There's nothing.
Now, those are things we love about Star Trek, mm-hmm. is like the, you know, the using literature to weave some moral tale or some dilemma or something. There's nothing. There's none of that in
there's
this.
There's no lesson to be learned from it at all.
Nobody learns.
It was just like it was like a clever puzzle.
If something happened. But it's, but
and
it's
they
really,
weren't even really getting the puzzle until like, you know, the end, like.
But it is kind of cool. Like I think it is a very accessible episode because you're not going to offend anybody. It's just a straight up, here's a sci-fi plot. It's tightly written and it all, like, it's just very, it's clear. It makes sense what's going to go on. Like one of the things that's different about this than a lot of the stuff we see these days is the especially towards the beginning, the slowness of the pace and the quietness. We just hear the ship sounds and they're playing poker, and it kind of eases
they
you
put
in.
A lot into that poker game,
especially
the first scene. There's, you know,
but you kind of
really
get,
taking their time with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you ease in, and the characters are all through their dialogue and action are all conveying whatever information you need to know about the setup and to kind of follow along and enjoy the ride as they proceed to the resolution. On the other hand, it's also as classic of an episode as much as I enjoy the episode, it is kind of slight in that sense. It's just sort of like, boom, this story doesn't really affect anything. It's just sort of an interesting tale.
Yeah. And I wonder how this is what makes it difficult to judge episodes from, you know, many years ago. Because on the one hand, you can recognize that something was done in a different time. For example, you can look at we've talked about this with older TOS episodes, and it was very progressive for the time. And but at the same time, there's
not so much today.
Yeah, exactly. But people are still able to objectively look at it and say, yes, that was progressive for the time. Some
progressive because they like weren't beating the women in the face.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that was a big step forward, I guess.
I mean, James Bond was at the time. Mm. Like around the time of TOS is when James Bond is just hitting women in the face to get them to be quiet.
Yeah, I remember there was an episode of Andy Griffith's show where they were talking about, like, Barney was talking to Andy about someone, some, like, domestic disturbance or something, and they were like, you know, he really walloped her this time or something.
I know, it's horrifying.
And actually, that was from The Simpsons. Actually, in The Simpsons, they actually referenced something like that directly, but that happened on the Andy Griffith show. He was like, really gave her a shiner or something like that. It's like, whoa. But, so... On the one hand, one is able to look back and sort of tell that something sort of was great for the time. Or you're able to look at an old video game and say that really moved. It doesn't play well today, but back then it moved things forward. Could this be another instance where stuff like this, sort of these kinds of episodes, were able to fly more easily back then? Because I think I remember, Patrick, you one time saying, and I don't know if I think I remember this. When Battlestar Galactica came out, you were saying that they spent less time with techno babble and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like things just kind of happened and moved along because you don't need to spend a lot of time on that. It whereas Star Trek would spend a lot more time on techno babble.
Some
Star Trek.
It's kind of an arc in Star Trek where it used to be techno babble was just like, here's a MacGuffin to explain it. And then as the lore and the episodes built up, people got more interested in like the particulars and they started trying to make it actually fit together consistently.
Right. Exactly. And so while this episode wasn't necessarily super heavy on technobabble, it was there.
Really.
Yeah, it was there, but it goes along with the idea of people going through a phase of getting more interested in this technobabble, and then at some point there's sort of a rejection, a subtle rejection of that, and moving more towards what we need from the plot, I guess. And this, since there was really, it didn't really do anything. It just kind of, it was like a neat little what-if scenario. It's like, musing over something. And so would an episode like that be able to pass, you know, today? Probably, I guess. But you know what I mean? Would a Star Trek episode try to pull off a silly little fun kind of episode like that didn't have anything really to say? I mean, the other thing too is they can do it if it's part of a greater serialized sort of story, but...
Well, it's also... So it's...
There's the loop episode in Discovery that we talked about.
Yeah, we talked about that. And
there's various loop episodes.
Manginess to make the silliest dude go crazy. I think is the name. And we, you know, that's...
But we learned something about...
Exactly. That's the difference. And I don't know what... If I'm going to be called to account on it, I would take cause and effect over that one episode any day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I enjoy the episode.
But the other episode does have actual... It attempts... to have some character development between the beginning and the end of the episode. And we actually criticized that aspect of the episode in the sense that there was no real useful mechanism for it, because other than engineer Stamets, nobody else knew it was happening. So when it resolved itself, as far as they were concerned, they'd only been through once, even if they knew that they weren't. But anyway, that's largely beside the point. The main issue is that they did... In that instance, in the more modern contemporary instance, make an effort to do a similar type of time looping story, but have meaningful stuff come out of it.
Right. We learn directly about this pseudo whatever B plot you want to call it about Burnham, and then you're learning about this sort of kind of, you know, admittedly seemingly thrown together aspects of the what network? What's that? What's the plant?
Mycelial
network. We learn sort of like, oh, by the way, apparently it makes him immune to time sometimes or something, you know, but then there's also just you get to see the other characters and how they act and stuff. This season five of Star Trek, you're not learning anything about the characters either at all. There's like any of the characters could really be switched, except maybe during that poker game where Worf is all gruff and Riker's given this sort of smooth play.
Riker's so sexy.
He's intense and smooth, and Crusher is also smooth but excited, but she's smooth too. And then Data had that weird line about like, still no help for the Klingon. Pissed Worf off, and he's like, ugh.
Well, so to give an example, in the Discovery episode with Harry Mudd, he talks about the Federation. He makes a critique about the Federation. Mm-hmm. So the point is that they're even separate from the plot of that story, they do layer in things to think about. Which is great. On the other hand, this one is so... Cause and Effect is so sort of just bam, 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 super tightly written, and it's no frills. I mean, it's a bottle episode, and this is something they did. You know, it's a term, for those who aren't familiar, it's a term that I think derives from the original Star Trek, even, where it was, you know, you need to save some money, either because you've gone over budget on previous episodes or you're planning a big special effects heavy episode or something down the line. So you know, Star Trek would often do these bottle episodes, which would rely solely on the standing sets, no guest stars or limited guest stars, you know, very, very simple and straightforward, that it could all be done with the people you had at your disposal. It just makes it cheaper to produce.
And it seemed like I don't know if they reused any footage. You know, I always wonder about that, if how much of it was actually reused because it's repeating time. But even if it wasn't reusing footage, they could have just set, like, spoken their lines, like, just done a bunch of takes and put them together.
Yeah. Well, I think I was reading about how Jonathan Frakes was found it frustrating that they're doing all these scenes, but it's the same scene, but they just keep doing it over.
Right.
And there's like some
minute, and he directed
minute,
this episode.
Yeah, he's a director. There's minute variations, but it was difficult to do that and to keep, you know, to have to do like, okay, well, there's this first scene. Well, okay, well, the next scene, like a few scenes later, is the same scene where they're playing cards. Yeah, it's almost the same. I also read that they did a lot of interesting camera techniques on this one, and you can see.
Yeah.
Where there's like, so like the, a lot of the, when the bridge is, and the, all the shit's going down on the bridge, and there's like some bouncy camera. I think they put it on like a bungee cord, and the camera was all bouncing around on a bungee cord.
Really? It does look really good.
Abandoned ship.
You have there's a shot when they're in the ready room, and it's like, it's way up above them, and it's like looking down on them.
Oh,
it's, it looks, it's like a really weird, like surreal kind of shot.
Seems like they could have just used a webcam if that was a thing back then. But
it was not.
It wasn't. So that's the whole point.
there was no web.
Yeah. So I know, but I was just thinking, like, they should have just used something like that. It's like they didn't have that. That's
back
why
then
it was
they
expensive.
Had they had gopher cams.
But the camera cams. Stuff kind of gets, you know, funnier as the episode goes on.
Fax cams.
And it keeps repeating, and so as something keeps repeating, the meaning breaks down.
Right.
And we start looking at the characters, you know, sort of differently. We're looking at them more like through a aquarium or something, where they're, it's these people and they're trapped in their situation.
Yeah. Well,
and so that I think
my
interpretation is you know, some of the weirder shots, it's we're looking at them in a weirder perspective.
Do you remember those close-ups of,
like, things are breaking down
during the poker game, like halfway through, when the close up on Riker is all like right in fucking Riker's face.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they realized
straight
that,
on.
Yeah, they did that too, back and forth with Crusher and Riker. It was like almost like a creepy horror suspense movie where, like, they saw some ghosts or something.
Because you almost never see these characters 90 degrees straight ahead, right? Like, in terms of the camera, it's always at a sort of a little bit of an angle. That's just standard television for the most part. The choice of doing this weird, jarring, like, Riker's giant head filling the giant screen was an interesting choice, and it was unsettling. And I think a lot of the choices were made to make you unsettled. The music is another example, where the you know, that 80s/90s TNG synth creepy music it's proper creepy. It's creepier than a lot of stuff you'll hear in TV shows these days.
So speaking of sort of so repeating scenes, so do you think they probably just recorded all those repeated things just back to back? I would imagine they probably just sat down. They're like, okay, take one. This is the first time through. This is the second time through.
They could, yeah.
You know,
it would make sense production wise.
You can tell. I mean, and by the last time I counted, there was five versions of the ship we saw. One in the very opening, and then four others where we actually saw the story. There was five versions of the ship. In the fifth version of the ship, you can tell by the end they're just rushing through that conversation.
Yeah,
and you know, editing. And there's no real in story explanation. Not that there needs to be, but there's no sort of in story explanation of, like, why are they suddenly just like rushing through their lines all of a sudden? It's because, well, for screen time, obviously we don't need to see all that bullshit, but we do need to get, they do need to get across the idea of this is repeating and there's something new happening. Let's get the old stuff that's happened out of the way so we can introduce something new. But it just results in a really awkward sort of less believable conversation, but in not in a way that's really problematic. It's just kind of funny that you can tell it's like they kind of rush along.
Yeah,
get
into the resolution.
Usually when they do that, they skip scenes and just give you smaller snippets of each scene. But this one, by the end, it's like, you're going to pull a 7, pull an 8, pull a 9. I feel like I've done this
Deuce.
Before. I'm getting new paw.
6.
That was past Tuesday. That's not what I'm talking about. You know?
Right.
Nib paw. He was experiencing nib paw.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember what he said, but like the Klingon deja vu.
I like that they don't mention deja vu. It's so cool because it's like, okay, Klingons have a similar thing.
They do mention it, like, not
Just not in that specific scene.
Right.
They're not like, I respected that they respected the audience enough that when Worf said that, Beverly wasn't like, oh, do you mean like deja vu?
Right.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. But speaking of other awkward stuff, I totally forgot, because it's been a while, I think, since I've seen any TNG season 5 episodes. And I let the, in this case, I let, you know, when I'm watching the shows for the podcast, I watch the opening themes. But when I'm just plowing through, just having fun, I'll do the skip intro.
Same here.
And
I even watch the closing one, too.
I usually do skip intro. Just as a side note, Natalie really likes the TNG intro. She thinks it's really hilarious when the Enterprise is just like blasting by and like, and she's like, where is it? Oh, there it is. And she all giggles. It's really great.
Well, that was, of course, it's the TNG attempt to mimic in some ways the TOS opening. But I forgot that the season 5 TNG had this weird, like, they did that different title card for the Next Generation that has it all like flaring behind it, like a warp shadow.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and that's one opening scene where I didn't notice. It's funny, I'll notice when the music is a little different, but I don't notice as much when the visual stuff changes.
Yeah, like I've gotten into, I'm now a quarter of the way into Enterprise season 3, and that's when they first adjust the music to add that kind of jazzy undertone. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Which is, it is kind of awesome, although I was reminded that in the opening scene of season 3 is this, of Enterprise, is this really intense, I won't give any spoilers, but it's really intense, disturbing, and it's talking about effectively like the planning of a genocide, and then it goes to, it's been a long run with this jazzy music. It actually, you know, somebody on Reddit made the point, they said it was weird in season 3 they decided to make the show more dark but the theme song more like upbeat.
It's funny
because it's kind of awkward throughout all of season 3 because most of those episodes are not like comedic. And so it's like this joke, but anyway, this was an example of just kind of that funny thing, because I think if I recall correctly, I think they stopped doing that in season 6 and 7 with that
upbeat thing.
No. I'm talking about in TNG, the Star Trek, The Next Generation, with like the crazy, you know, future shadow effect.
Future shadow.
I think they just wanted to kick it up a notch. Future. Or something.
Can you tell the difference?
Whoa. Oh, I can tell the difference.
Sorry. I didn't know. I'm sorry about that. I'm pee-pee, poo-poo. Fart, pee-pee-poo. Now in the windsock. Pee-pee-poo-poo, fart, pee-pee-poo.
It's a little less
Not that different.
Okay.
Because you're going out of your way.
Pippity-pop-pop. Okay, yeah, so we're talking about flared Star Trek title. They took that away in season 6 or 7.
We should comment on the fact that one of the reasons that this episode, the episode is a classic episode, and I think it's justified that it's considered as such.
Look.
But one of the main things I think that helps drive that is that it has probably, I'm trying to think of other examples, but certainly at the time was sort of this mind-blowing opening, teaser, you know, cold open, where it's, you see this emergency and then the fucking Enterprise blows the fuck up and everyone's like, what the hell happened? And then when it goes back again, writers respecting the audience, there's no like 1 week earlier or anything, like it just throws you back in the story. And of course it wouldn't say 1 week earlier because it's the next time loop, and it's
I think it's the same star date. I mean, I think it keeps saying the same.
Yeah, they do, because they don't realize. Incidentally, 17 days off.
It's funny how it goes all chaotic to like kind of chipper and sort of like, oh, we're on this mission to chart something or other, you know, the Star Thieves, blah. The Typhon.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever. But it's like all super chaotic and stuff. And then it's not just comes back to a calm thing. It's calm, but it's also Picard's all like, doot, 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 doot.
They're just out there doing like fun Enterprise stuff, like sending out probes and luminosity probes and spectrometers and stuff.
It was a flux spectrometer.
Flux spectrometers, yeah. Like, they weren't online yet.
Yeah, they were still down for realignment. Data recommended that they use a gravitron polarimeter.
Palermo is great this time of year.
It's like, even if the weird stuff doesn't happen on the Enterprise, like the Enterprise is still fun. They're just out there in space, like sending out like spectrometers and luminosity
studies.
So
the reason Data recommended that they use a gravitron polarimeter. It's because it performs a similar function as the flux spectrometer.
Gonna have to take him at his word on that.
But what you just said about Patrick is how it was new, this idea of the opening was new and all this
totally
stuff.
New.
You should hear what you said about Patrick.
That's fucked up, man. I bet I said some fucked up shit. That's kind of the point I was getting to before about what works in what time period. One of the reasons this worked in this time because of, like, you didn't need, not that we need social commentary and everything we do,
yeah,
but this concept of like time loop and bloop a bloop by itself, it doesn't really, it doesn't, it seems, it's hard to say if it would really cut it just presenting it like that now. And not that, yeah, we necessarily progressed beyond that, because it's probably cyclical. There's probably a rejection of all that, and that probably some point we'll want to get back to that because we just want things simpler and back to how a fun little neat story again, you know? So it's,
well, the other argument is not that it wouldn't cut it with audiences, but that it just wouldn't, that the producers don't think it would cut it. You get it, this weird, there's a very interesting and complicated and not easy to answer, not easy to analyze sort of dialogue that goes on between content creators and the audiences, right? Because the content creators, they want to make something that the audiences enjoy, either because they just want to produce something the audiences want to enjoy, or they want to make money off of it, or a combination of the two. And then, of course, the audiences have their kind of views of what they think they want. And those are valid viewpoints. However, you know, I tend to buy into the argument that more often than not, what the audience really ends up enjoying are those things that they were not expecting, mm-hmm, the things that went in a different direction. But as you note, because of the cycles of things, the different direction could be to go more simple, to go more, mm-hmm, episodic. That would be a unique thing now. People are craving that. It's not that we don't like the serialized stuff, because I love the serialized stuff, particularly when it's done well, but it is a different form of storytelling than, mm-hmm, what you could do in TNG with these purely episodic, like super razor thin plots, but because the characters are so good and the actors are so good that they can hang a really, really fun and interesting story on these plots.
I was thinking, and I'm not sure how well this applies, but I was starting to think about how video games, when I remember growing up with like Nintendo and Super Nintendo and all that stuff.
Nintendo.
It's for breakfast now.
Oh my God.
It's a cereal now.
Was that?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pies, fresh from the sewers to you.
The Nintendo cereal.
You're just gonna start. I'm singing the turtle song, and you're just gonna start.
You're not even singing the turtle song.
I was singing like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pie song.
Off in the distance.
I can't keep up anymore.
The game's dragging on.
I'm just kidding. I'm just playing with you.
Smoke some more crack.
But suddenly everyone's looking at me.
My mind has been wondering what could it be. They point to the sky
and I
look up above.
And a baseball falls into my glove. I play right field.
It's important, you know.
You gotta know how to hit it.
You gotta know how to throw.
That's why I play right field, way out where the dandelions grow. Making it great.
Pizza Hut commercial from the VHS copy of the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which is a great movie. Oh, go check it out.
Yeah, partially based on the graphic novels, too, which is good.
The commercial or the movie?
The movie. The commercial.
I want to see the graphic novel of the Pizza Hut commercial.
You were singing a Pizza Hut commercial?
Yeah, that was a Pizza Hut commercial.
I think it was like a They Might Be Giants song or something.
No.
No, it's all like folksy and fun.
It is. We should pull up that commercial and listen to it.
So we were
talking about Star Trek at one point.
Yeah. there was a point we were making about
I forget.
Episodes being, I was talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pies, Nintendo. Oh yeah, I was making
something
a point
about Nintendo.
You reverse engineered your point.
I did. I integrated it. +X. So yeah, back, I remember growing up with Nintendo, Super Nintendo, all that stuff. There was a lot of two-player games. It was big, you know, couch co-op, you know. They didn't have a name for it back then. It was just, you know, playing video games together. Then around the 3D era, when there was, you know, Super Mario 64 and all that stuff, suddenly,
technically, it's fake 3D because it's just vector graphics rendered on a two-dimensional.
Well, the original Doom wasn't even 3D at all.
That was just straight up, yeah,
straight up brilliance. It was crazy.
Well, Wolfenstein as well.
Yeah, was great. Anyways, when all those 3D games came out, suddenly there was such a demand for this. People were rejecting these 2D side scrollers, and there's just everything was 3D. And then as a result, because you couldn't really have 2-player 3D games, there wasn't enough power for it. Then it started to be. I remember when Contra came out for PlayStation, which is a side scroller. It was, I don't quote me on this, but it was, I believe it was a one player game.
I'm writing down to this quote.
And then I believe it was a one player game. It wasn't that, it was something similar that there was, it should have been a two player game. There was no reason for it to be one player because it's a side scroller. But I think they'd just gotten into this sort of vibe, this sort of paradigm. To that they were so used to creating these 3D games, one player, everyone thought the experience was one player experience now, and nobody cared about the two player experience. It pissed me off for a long time. And then now, I mean, it comes back and there's 2D games all over the fucking place now.
They, all up in this shit.
They have a whole series of games they call Metroidvanias, right? Where, and it's all about that. And there's a lot of two player games now. Anyways, the point that I was making is that you were talking about the
Star Trek.
The audience the audience expectation versus the people who produce this item, what they believe the audience expectation is.
Yeah.
And sometimes people want to be refreshed on something new.
I think it's one of those wonderful things about the creative process where for all of our collected knowledge and experience and particularly those people who work in these industries, when it comes to what's going to be a hit, there are people who have experience, you know, when it comes to movie, music, etc. They know certain formulas. They've learned through time how they can put things together and increase the number of eyeballs or whatever. And it's not necessarily related to the actual quality, because as we all know, we see the movie where we're like, why is this movie making so much money when this other movie is really great and it's not making any money? So, of course, there are things you can do to increase your probability of financial success or possibly Oscar success. You know, there's a pattern to that. But the things that really blow people's minds, they don't always make the most money and they don't always win all the most awards. But the things that stick in people's brains for decades, and Star Trek is a good example, has a number of examples within the library of Star Trek, are those things that come at you from a different direction and they stick in your mind because of that. Or you look at something like Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, where they invent or evolve forms of storytelling to take it in some really interesting direction so that you don't know exactly what's going to happen next. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's just an interesting thing about creativity that there is that, you know, that ephemeral aspect to it that makes it tricky to know whether something's going to be successful or not. And how do you measure that success, of course? Because when you're working on something like Star Trek, obviously you want to, if you're Paramount, you want to make as much money as you can. But on the other hand, you also have access to this fairly specific criteria of fan. And you can do a lot of things in that world that you've created and have a lot of flexibility. But you'll get a lot of engagement because the people who are fans of Star Trek are the types of people who are eager and interested to get really, really into something like this.
So I don't remember if you mentioned, but was this episode, it's a memorable episode.
Yeah, it was popular from the get-go.
Yeah.
I believe I saw this air on, because this is around the time I got into TNG a little bit before this, like maybe season 3 or season 4 is when I got into, as a kid, like watching TNG on the regular when it came out. Even though it says it's aired March 23rd, because TNG was a syndicated show, that just means when it was made available and it could have first aired, because a lot of syndicated stations played their episodes in, you know, different time slots, different orders, things like that.
Was it airing on... was it actually Paramount TV?
No,
by that
yet.
Point, was it still like just Channel 20?
No, TNG was TNG and Deep Space Nine were always fully syndicated. Okay. So they sold it to contracts to various stations.
So we were just watching it, it was just Channel 20.
Yeah, right? For here in DC area, it was on Channel Paramount. 20. On DC 20.
But 20 became the Paramount channel.
Eventually, yeah. Under
a brief.
That was when Voyager started. Voyager was what was the premiere show on the Paramount, on the United Paramount Network. You kids won't know UPN. Anything about this because it is a failed network.
Yeah, like the WB.
Yeah, but this WB at least evolved into the CW.
Right.
So that's, you know, there's still that kind of vibe going around.
Spike TV used to be the Tennessee Network.
Oh yeah,
TNN
started on that. But yeah, so you know, TNG was in syndication. But, you know, I wasn't on the, I was online at that time.
Why does Tennessee get its own network?
I wasn't on the message boards.
What happened
boards
with
there.
Cable back in the day?
I don't know, man.
It would be cool. I didn't think to do this. It would have been cool to look up some of the Usenet conversations, because what's neat is Google has all that stuff archived, or at least most of it. And certainly all the Star Trek, the major Star Trek Usenet groups back in the day, there was a lot of conversation going on. Really interesting to read those old conversations. I've gone through some of those old files. What's interesting about it is to see what's different and what's the same. You know, some of the stuff that's different is there's, I think, overall more politeness. I think a little, or actually significant amount more homogeneity in the fan groups. I think it's mostly white, college-educated men. I think most of them are in Usenet because they have access through their college or their professors or things like that.
Jeez.
Boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider. Girls go to college to get more knowledge. Or I think it's funnier if you say it the other way around. Like, girls go to college to get more knowledge, and boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider. That's funnier.
Yeah, we'll workshop that, and next week we'll.
If you get to Jupiter,
well, like, it's pretty smart.
You got to be smart to get to Jupiter.
But what some of the stuff that's
you
different.
Need a computer.
So something. Some of the stuff that's the same is you still have people back then with a lot of the same criticisms. You know, a lot of people hating on TNG, and because they're all about TOS, you know, and
those people are stupid.
And then there's the vice versa. You have people who only like TNG and they thought TOS was dumb.
Yeah, well, okay, so
that still exists.
I always feel like TNG, and I don't know what I'm basing this off of really, but people who were into TNG but not TOS were just kind of neutral to TOS. They just were really into TNG, whereas TOS, you know, was just like whatever.
And you know, this was of course before any kind of you know, easy access or online streaming or anything, but these shows were playing all the time. Yeah. TOS was in reruns all over the fucking place.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I just remember watching TV to pop. That's how I got to know Star Trek, was just watching TV on a Sunday or whatever, and it just like popped on.
And TNG would, I forget exactly the night it would air on DC20, but they would show it like on Saturday. So like if you missed it, sometimes you'd have a chance to get to see it again, that kind of thing.
And then they were always weeknights. Late at night, they were always just showing reruns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I would watch a lot of it, just late at night.
I watched a lot of rerun on What's Happening.
I knew you.
Which was
there.
Also on DC20.
Yeah, that show.
Paramount.
That
do
show
they,
is What's Happening.
Do they still own King's Dominion?
No, they sold King's Dominion. The amusement park King's Dominion, located in Dawswell, Virginia, just outside of Richmond.
Which used to be owned by Hanna-Barbera. It used to be Hanna-Barbera's.
Or at least
King's
a license.
Yeah, license. Sort of.
But Paramount bought King's Dominion, I guess, in the 90s, rebranded everything, and they had a bunch of Klingons walking around, which was kind of cool. They had some other Star
some
Trek
Wayne's
people,
World.
Too.
They had some Wayne's World.
Yeah,
some
anything Wayne's Paramount. World. But then they sold it off, and so they got rid of the Klingons, and then they renamed the Wayne's World roller coaster. They just took the Wayne's World sign off. It was called the Hurler.
Oh,
but it was like the Wayne's
right.
World Hurler, and then they just took the Wayne's World, literally just took the Wayne's World sign down and left up the part that said Hurler.
Yeah.
And now they've renamed it to something else. They've like rebuilt it.
It's funny how they got so cheap with some of those signs sometimes.
Yeah, no, Paramount was all about, I think they owned
they had a
couple
What was the movie with Tom Cruise and he was a race car driver?
Days of Thunder?
Yeah, they had some kind of ride.
Yeah, I went on that
3D
ride.
Days of
like
Thunder.
It was like a precursor to one of those 4D movie theaters that we're talking about.
Yeah,
talking about where you're
sort of like the stuff at Disney World with the
your chair all moved around.
Yeah. Star Wars.
And they have those the children with feathers that skulk about behind your legs and tickle your legs when the rats come out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
Those are children. That's not automated. They hire small children.
I don't know how many
scuttle about
it's not
underneath
puffs
your
of
seat.
Air.
I don't know how many rats are hanging around in a NASCAR stock car kind of.
Dude, there's a bunch.
Really?
Yeah, it's a whole subculture. The rats of NASCAR.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Or it's like a meta where they're not trying to pretend.
They got little Confederate flags.
They're not trying to.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, though. They banned it.
They're not trying to actually pretend to be in the NASCAR. They're just trying to make you think that there's rats in their ride.
So one thing I liked about this episode was right from the get-go. I mean, this doesn't focus on a particular character, but they put a lot of this on Beverly Crusher's shoulders. And she's sort of ahead of the game of everybody. Like, everyone sort of catches up with her. But she's the one who starts really starting to notice something. And I had a question for you guys, because so the first time we see, you know, after we come back from the opening and we see them play poker, and Beverly calls Riker's bluff, and she says she just had a feeling. Now, I want to poll you guys to see, do you think that in the first round through, she didn't call his bluff and she lost to him? Because we don't get to see that. We don't get to see the whatever previous rounds they went through. It's not clear.
Yeah.
We just don't get to see that. But we do see her being like, ah. And then Riker seems like really weirded out that she called his bluff. And so that led me to think that maybe she I think the implication she called his bluff because of whatever imprint of knowledge she had from the previous.
Yeah, she was already starting to notice. You see in the card game early in the loops that they're already asking Data. I think Data's stacking the deck. Like,
yeah.
And he was fucking stacking the deck. That was the
eventually.
Thing. Yeah.
Okay, now.
Well, actually, you could also say with Picard, when she went into, reported to Picard that some shit was going down, and she was basically telling him, like, I'm seeing this, I'm hearing voices, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, he was reading his book, and the first time we see him do it, he's not talking down to her because he's awesome and he's Jean-Luc Picard, but he was basically saying, I don't really believe you, but we should check it out anyways. But what he was going was, this is what I got from it, where he was saying, I've read this book, I feel like I've read these, paragraphs before, yeah. But I might just not have read this book in years, and you know, basically saying like it just could be like an old memory of something.
I have read a lot of books.
Yeah, and
maybe
so
I forgot.
Yeah, and so and so basically saying it's like maybe you
he was humble bragging about how many books he reads.
I was expecting him to like say what book it was so he could show off. Be like, yes, I'm reading this book.
So he's basically telling her like you probably heard that in another time, whatever, and so forth. But actually,
either that or he was conveying that's what I thought, but now that you're telling me this, maybe I'll rethink that kind of thing.
Well, he followed it up with basically you're tired, you know, we think you need more sleep or something like that. But what's awesome about Picard is
like you've been working too hard.
Even though he's skeptical, he's not going to write her off. He's still going to be like, but we should check this out for sure, though.
Absolutely,
yeah. And so but the way I took it, the way I read it was, was that he was basically saying, I probably just read these paragraphs years and years ago, but what was actually happening is, no, he hadn't. He'd read them a few times already.
He read them, like, last week.
He read them, like...
And, like, every like... What is it? It's like a 5-hour loop, a 4-hour loop. Like,
yeah. So he read them every day for like, you know, however,
like a few times a day
for like 10 times. And he assumed that he had just read it years ago and was remembering that. But no, actually, he had just remembered it a few times.
Well, I also like because with each character, they except for Beverly, who kind of is catching on to things right from the beginning of the episode, each of the other characters, the first time they show them, they're kind of like, whatever, this is nothing. This is weird, but it's nothing. And then they get like progressively more like, huh? And they do that, like, for example, with Geordi, where at first she's like, have you ever had these symptoms before? He's like, no. And then the next time he's like, you know, maybe. And then like the last time he's like, you know, I'm pretty sure I have. And then with Picard, again, the great Patrick Stewart. The first time, like you said, you know, he's just like, oh, you know, I just didn't really think much of it. And then the second time he's like kind of looking at the pages. Yeah. And then there's that last scene where he's all like super lounged out, just chilling. Yeah. Looks like he's drinking some whiskey. And he's looking at his book like, what the fuck is wrong with my book?
I know. He keeps like, he's like, wait a minute. What? And he's got like his jacket off, like. When he's got that jacket uniform.
Yeah.
So it's just like the funny gray shirt underneath.
Yeah. I think that was the first moment that there was any sort of indication that a repeat was going on was when she went to Geordi and we reported the dizziness. And yeah, it wasn't until the third, that was the second time it blew up. The third time he started believing her. But also she was the focal point around all those meetings too. Because so they had this ready room meeting, right? And so that's when the first time through she reported, second time through technically, but she reported.
I really want that conference table, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And that whole room is tight with that space outside and everything. Yeah,
I want some space outside.
They got really great windows on.
But she was reporting.
Who cleans the windows?
At this meeting, she was reporting that she'd heard voices and they started talking about it. They're like, huh, that's weird, blah, blah, blah. Then Worf is like, you know, we got to get to the bridge because things are blowing up. The second time is when she actually talks to Picard, and Picard's like, we should talk about this tomorrow. So this time they're talking about the shit at the ready room meeting, except the meeting was because of the shit.
I think it's in the conference room.
Is it? Oh, that's conference room. What's the difference between the ready room and the conference room? I can't remember.
Isn't the ready room where Picard hangs out? I don't know. Whatever.
The same
terminology.
Yeah, but anyway, so
maybe it is.
So whereas the first time she reported,
I think those rooms are adjacent and adjacent to the bridge.
So in the, let's say whatever conference room,
same diff.
So the first time she reports it at the meeting, the second time she reports it to Picard, and that's why they have the meeting. The third time they had already started talking about it and like decided to take some action on it. That's why they had to meet early. Notice on the third time, Worf didn't call in. It was Riker calling in that fourth time, rather, and Riker was like, and it wasn't during the conference because they were able to get through the conference all the way through this time. The first two times they weren't able to get through it because Worf called in and said shit was going down.
Yeah.
Fourth time meeting was early. They were figuring some shit out, and then Riker was like, hey, you got to get your shit back here. The last time they went after she called Geordi. And this time it was from Geordi's perspective. First, she called Picard the first two times. Then she called Geordi, and those were all from her perspective. But this time it was from Geordi's perspective, and he called her, and then they went to the ready room meeting. This time it wasn't Worf that interrupted it. It was Ro, and they both said the same thing. We're getting unusual readings, except Ro used the contraction we're, whereas Worf said we are getting unusual readings.
Well, that's the secret right there.
Just saying, so she was the focal point.
Like, and lackadaisical Bajorans, their contractions.
They had these meetings, and they were all there, and they all talked about the same shit, but the reasoning for why the meeting was kind of different, how it got reported was different, but it all went down in the same kind of way, which I thought was interesting.
And it leads to a question that I had.
A question.
Or a conclusion, could be both. I don't know.
Question.
I don't speak English so great. and the implications of this, if I'm correct in my reasoning here, and you tell me if I'm wrong, the implications do somewhat undercut the dramatic urgency of the episode because they don't explain why these people are in a time loop. Right.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really explain why they're having feelings of deja vu. They get when you talk about the technobabble, there's a little bit. They talk about the phase shifts that are messing with Geordi's thing. So they're saying, OK, they've given us some implicit reason to sort of guess as to why they're able to receive information from a prior time loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no problem. It's important for the story, and it's a great story. However, if we are to understand that prior time loops can affect future time loops, in other words, by transferring some, no matter how minute, some form of information to that time loop, then can we not assume that mathematically, eventually, no matter what, they'll break out of the time loop because that information builds up and causes them, as you just recounted, to start making different decisions. And since there's only a finite number of decisions that lead to them being in exactly the right position to get hit by the ship, eventually, whether it's 1,000 times through or 1,000,000 times through, eventually they're going to not – the time loop will be disrupted because they won't get into the explosion.
And right. And so the Enterprise has somebody like Data working for them, and they have like – lots of advanced technology, whereas the Bozeman didn't have the same kind of technology, and they certainly didn't have a Data on board. So,
it just had Dr. Fraser Crane.
So were they just looping for 80 years?
That's another tricky thing to figure out.
And they hadn't figured it out?
So
just because of they just weren't on that level yet in the Enterprise?
Or it might have just been 17 days, but then they went through time.
This is
that's what
probably
it's not exactly clear if they go through time and then it's starts looping.
Now,
or
it's a problem. That's the trouble. That's why I didn't want to take time.
Or they've been going through time since the previous century.
The temporal mechanics at Starfleet Academy is too fucking difficult.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, at Starfleet, they need to start teaching about warning signs of being stuck in a temporal causality loop. At Starfleet Academy, it's like, you know, you'll get a Geordi visor and
it fucking comes up frequently enough.
They probably didn't teach it back in the previous century because it hadn't happened that much, or they didn't know that it had happened.
Well, by the
time of the TNG century, they would be aware that maybe that this thing is more common.
Well, it happened on Discovery, obviously.
Yeah, it certainly happens on Discovery.
I wanted to get back to what you were saying about how
Discovery is all, you know, secret.
How they would break out of this this causality, temporal causality loop. That's kind of, I remember, like, what I was saying about Back to the Future, too, about, except yours is probably more likely because it's in a much more contained environment.
Yeah, because it's a pure loop as opposed to the different branching or whatever.
Yeah, and I was saying, like, well, if you eventually bet on all the winners, you'd think that would somehow have some effect on the future. But then also, there is, of course, DS9, the past tense, where... You know, they
fuck up a lot of shit.
They fuck up a lot of shit, and they replace the whole
Gabriel Bell.
They replace him with Sisko, and once again, I don't think Sisko was Gabriel Bell the whole time. I think in the story they were saying that he replaced him, and so that would cause a lot of issues. But no, I agree, and of course, you know, if we want to, and I not that I think what you said is nitpicking, but that also reminded me of I guess a nitpick, which is like, you know, they remember all this stuff about this poker game and all this other shit and what cards are being dealt. They can't remember that this choice that happened between Riker and Data at the very end. You'd think at some point, even one time, Beverly, when they're doing some shit with Data by putting that Dekion transmission in his head, they're like, Geordi's like, I don't know if this is the right problem. What if we did this before? She's like, well, do you remember doing it? And he's like, well, no. She's like, that's probably a good thing. Yeah. You know, so
which is good logic, by the way.
Yeah, it is good logic. Exactly. So at the end, you would think they would be like, something about this is familiar. It's pretty, we're going to blow up, and it's, and which decision did we go with? You know, you'd think they would kind of sort of.
Well, no, you know, that's actually, it's a very good point. And the other factor here is that the way this story is portrayed is they sort of act as if the only reason they were able to do this is because of what they were able to do with Data and, you know, kind of influencing his subconscious. It's a, but that's not true, because everyone was affected. Picard was affected. Geordi's visor, of course, was another potentially special thing to be affected, which it was. But
his visor is often acts as a MacGuffin.
Yeah, but they didn't even need that because again, mathematically, right? If you're going through enough, as you said, eventually somebody, wouldn't they just like be playing poker and then Beverly would be like, oh, fuck, Riker, when it comes time, do the thing that you want to. Just ignore Data.
Right.
You know, or Data, don't listen, don't use your idea.
Or Data, when you're giving your idea, fucking present it a little bit more quickly. You notice he like fucking, he's like, Captain, I have an idea. It's my suggestion that, it's like, you had to cut that in half right there.
The whole time that you see the Bozeman just coming closer. Yeah.
That's what's kind of awesome about it. It is like, awesome. You're just so like, fucking stressful. Oh my God. It's like watching a
and
shark.
And Picard just goes, okay, Data says this, I'm going to go with it. He's obviously the smartest guy on the ship, like whatever.
Yeah,
like,
he just totally
like, okay, Riker says this, Data says this. Okay, Data, you got it. Do it.
Yeah, he just totally shit on Riker. He was
every fucking time.
well, Worf has it even worse, right? Because when they were talking about what to do in that meeting, and Worf is like, he gives the one and only suggestion. He's like, we should reverse course. And he was like, nah. Riker's like, well, what if that caused it? And Picard's like, yeah, we shouldn't start, you know, doing other
shit.
Let's
keep on a clear course.
Yeah.
Well, there is that great YouTube clip of all the times they Worf suggests something and they shoot him down.
Yeah.
And they go with another suggestion. And in a high proportion of those, it turns out that Worf's decision would have been correct. Not always, but a lot of times, you know. He would have saved them some trouble, and this is probably one of the chief examples of that.
It's a bunch of racism.
Yeah, probably.
Anti-Klingon propaganda.
Anti-Klingon.
Was it no luck for the Klingon or whatever that was that Data said? Still no help for the Klingon.
Still no help for the Klingon.
So, so what else? They were able to record 6.2 seconds.
Pair of ladies for the doctor.
Yeah, that's a funny one too. So there was a localized subspace scan. It picked up a Dekion field distortion at the same time that Crusher was hearing the voices. Some kind of acoustic energy. And from that, they were able to get 6.2 seconds of recorded audio. All of the bits that tell them that shit's going to go down, but none of the bits that really help them at all, like, you know, when the Data and Picard's stuff, that's fine. That's just by chance. That's just happened. Life works by chance like that.
It's more dramatic.
So when they would have performed a narrow bandwidth analysis, they eliminated
all hands abandon ship. Repeat, all hands abandon.
Maybe it means we need to do a phase 3 diagnostic.
Oh, yeah, right.
let's do that. Yes, do it.
They did the phase 2, and it gave them a bunch of threes. But I wonder, what kind of plugins do you think they have to filter those audio waves, you know? How did Data get it? Do you think, like
positronic brain, brother?
Data's got that positronic
brain.
But they don't just do everything. You need plugins. You need some kind of plugins.
No, he just has to
you take off the side of his head, and you plug something in.
Data can do it.
He just tilts his head a little bit, and then he can do it.
How does he learn new things? How does he learn shit like that?
He already knows it.
Philosophical question.
Do they have an internet? Is that how they do that? Like, they weren't really thinking about it.
No, they weren't. And I was reading a really interesting article with Ron Moore talking about his time writing on TNG and then DS9 and Battlestar Galactica, and he was talking about how early on TNG, when he first got hired, you know, and Ron Moore is this great story where he wrote a spec script, and TNG was, you know, I think a girlfriend at the time or somebody he knew was able to get him a tour of the set. And when he was on the tour, he had already sent it in, you know, I think sent in the spec script and nobody paid attention to it, but he was able to like give it to like hand it to Michael Piller or somebody, like, what, regardless, he was able to get in the hands of the people. They ended up buying it. They bought another one, and then they brought him on as a writer. And but he talks about how a lot of people from today's perspective, they forget that the internet was not a thing. You know, right. The internet existed at the university level, but it was not a common thing for public people. And it certainly was not something that the writers were intimately familiar with at the beginning. But then they were there when the concept of being online and Usenet and FidoNet and the BBSs getting networked together and the Telnet and Gopher and all that, that was starting to emerge into the consciousness. And how somewhat bizarre it was to be writing the sci-fi show and then this like stuff that was like more sci-fi than what they were writing about was appearing in real life, and they were having to sort of adjust to that. So just an interesting perspective on that. And how they, he also talked about how they used to, back then they didn't even have computers at first. You know, you'd like write up your scripts on like a typewriter or whatever, or you handwrite the scripts and then you'd give them. He said Paramount had a secretarial pool from the old days that they were professional script writers. They knew all the format and everything. So you hand wrote stuff and you'd send it in, and a few hours later you would get the script back in like script form. And then it was some revolutionary thing when all of a sudden Paramount bought a bunch of PC computers and eventually some Mac computers, and the writers could sit back there and just print out the stuff.
And a bunch of ladies got fired.
Yeah, and exactly. A bunch of people. Women got completely canned because of that. Anyway, so it's interesting thinking about that type of stuff, that this is a old enough show that it predates, you know, the common use of cell phones and the internet and all that.
Right. And so we think about, you know,
the show is older than some of my coworkers.
Oh, snap. Moment of silence for something.
Not really, no.
For your young coworker.
For my weird. But that brings it back to, how does, you know, Data know all that shit? You know, how does
positronic positronic brain?
Yeah, but I mean,
algorithms, brother.
He's got algorithms.
But he knows, he has knowledge of so much shit. They must have had some kind of central.
He's hooked up to the computer.
He's hooked. You think he just hooks himself? Do they have a wireless connection, or do you think he has to wire himself into a terminal every once in a while?
Guy's got ears, man.
And that's what I'm saying. Things that require very specific algorithms. Algorithms, it's the word. Quantum algorithms.
Did they know about algorithms?
Quantum algorithms. But how do you filter all those audio waves? How do you just do that? You need a plug-in. Plug-in.
I'm saying,
it does not have to be a
plug-in.
You open up
Data's head and you plug something in.
He had a whole chip dedicated to emotion. A whole chip.
It didn't work very well.
No. Ah. So you plug a plug in his head and it gives him a plug in.
That's a plug in. That's a plug in. You plug it right in, man.
That's how you got
it. I had a question.
You know, it's real quick. It seems like, so they could use, they were able to detect all these voices, these thousands of voices through time, and filter them all. It seems like you could leverage that time recording feature, you know, where you can record what anyone is saying somehow, to know what everybody in the whole universe is saying at any given time.
Well, like you said, it was an artificial constraint that Data could parse. His plugins were insufficient to parse out all the conversations exactly, but he was able to get a couple key pieces that sounded real scary, but so, provided very little information.
If you went down that line, though, I'm saying you could record what somebody is saying on the other side of space, you know, using that same... Because if you can record what somebody said in a time loop in the past, you know what all these people are saying at the same time.
But it was only because it was... But you got to remember...
You got to use subspace. That's the secret.
It was only because Beverly had the foreknowledge and wherewithal to pull out her recorder when she knew the voices were going to be coming. So they actually got a recording of the voices. So it's not like they knew exactly when the voices were going to happen. It only seems to happen.
So
that
the only
reason,
yeah. So it wasn't like they picked up secret voices, because the voices were audio. People could hear them. It's strange that only some people could hear them, though.
Yes,
which is weird.
Spatial anomaly.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Quantum singularity, or whatever they call it, a micro singularity.
Yeah.
Quantum singularity.
Kind of like micro machines.
That was a different episode with a micro singularity.
But I have a question. Right. The question I have is, so they're playing poker. They're taking it very seriously.
For real, though.
But as we know, in TNG, certainly on the Enterprise, they don't really have money per se, right?
I was thinking about that, too.
So I was wondering, what if the chips actually were like, the poker chips were like little computer chips that had the conscious memories of Federation enemies embedded in them. And that's what had the value. That's what created the value for the book. Because you wanted to collect as many of the... And you could torture them if you wanted.
There was like a con chip.
I wasn't thinking about that.
Oh, what were you thinking about?
I was just thinking maybe they're
just really into plastic.
Well, I was thinking maybe there were favors. Like, you do the dishes this week or something like that. You know?
I think they just replicate the dishes.
And then they put the dishes back in the replicator and it beams them away.
Okay, well, then they do something else. They fluff your pillow every night or something. I don't know.
So Riker has to come in and fluff Beverly's pillow?
You know, extra guard duty, whatever, you know?
I dug Beverly just sort of chilling, drinking some, aperitif.
Cool. From some tiny little glass.
Snipping her flowers.
She had that tiny little delicate glass.
She had some crazy pajamas.
What's cool about
that? She broke that glass every single time.
Yeah, I know, right? And then the last one, I was like, did you just throw that on the ground?
Okay? Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's in. She's like, yeah, I'm fine.
I'm okay.
Right. One of those times she actually made it a point not to knock it over.
Some kind of like cordial or sherry.
It was cool because she was
some kind of synth cordial.
I don't know why I was like really paying attention to that scene more so than I had in the past. And I think I previously had assumed that she was, you know, having a little drink, playing with her flowers, and then was gonna go to bed to read. But then I realized, no, she had been reading and then was like, I'm done fucking reading.
I'm going to have a drink.
And then, because, you know, if you look at the scene, she's getting ready for sleep. That's why she turns off the lights and stuff. And then here's the voices. But anyway, that is apropos of nothing. I just thought that was interesting.
And Wesley's not around because he's at the Academy.
Yeah, so she's having a good time.
The next episode is when, like, the shit goes down with Wesley at the Academy and, like, there's the scandal.
Well, I'm just thinking about what other than the Enterprise blowing up, which is a bit of a downer, overall, Beverly was having a great night. She played some poker with some friends, did pretty well.
Yeah.
Helped her buddy Geordi out with a minor medical thing.
Geordi almost fell down like the fucking warp core.
The warp core. He said it's a long way down, bro.
Falling down like a multi-story building. Like.
So real quick, I think it might be worth reading over some of the Facebook comments that people left. You know, of course, some people like Timothy Frogue, which is a cool name. He said it was a great episode. But you just made me think this one fella, Chris Settle, said, he just, all he put in the comment was, it's a long way down to the bottom of the warp core.
Yeah, for real.
And then somebody else was like, yeah, I just think of that a lot in my daily life.
Like, I'm glad like Ensign so-and-so was there to catch me. Who was it? Ensign somebody? You took notes.
I didn't catch that part.
Fletcher?
Ensign Fletcher,
I think it was Ensign Fletcher.
Yeah,
good thing Ensign Fletcher was there.
It's like, what's he doing hanging out with Ensign Fletcher late at night in the warp core?
It's Geordi, so I'm sure it was something.
He's like all on the catwalk.
Well, so that I do remember that line, too, because it never really thought about how the warp core is located in some deep pit or something. It's never really... I've never thought of it that way.
It goes between a lot of decks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right.
So it would be like, if you fell, it would be like a falling off of a building.
You'd be all squished.
Would it be like falling down when the Palpatine fell down? Like,
it would be like that kind of, yeah.
Except a little different.
A little different.
I was imagining some deep being inside the warp. I don't know what I was imagining.
It's the only place on the Enterprise where you'd be able to like fall.
It seems like an easily rectifiable hazard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Given modern 24th century technology. Oh,
and it's only Geordi's going to fall down then.
When she knocked that glass off the table, she said that it triggered her sensation even more intensely. Do you remember that time where she had a sensation triggered even more intensely?
Yeah, the ghost, when she has sex with the ghost guy. Right.
I had to bring that was low hanging fruit, but
to do that episode at some point because it's been so many years. I tend to skip that one and I feel bad about skipping that one, but then I read other people online say like, yeah, I decided not to skip it. Now I feel bad that I decided not to skip it. So But out of good due diligence, we will, as a podcast, eventually watch that particular episode and report back on our thoughts. All right, so another Lineal Johnson said, love the episode, but it bothers me that no one seemed to notice it was clearly a Federation starship heading straight for them. Which is, you know, I get that. I know it's like a decommissioned ship, but I mean, it's a fucking like Soyuz class. I mean, we saw it in like Star Trek movies and shit. Didn't Picard watch the Star Trek movies?
You'd think.
It looks like it's like Star Trek II, Star Trek III sort of era based on their uniforms, maybe.
I wonder how aware they are of ships that have gone missing, because that ship obviously went missing. So
good point.
You know, well, that's a good point.
You would think that they would have possibly heard.
Like they would have
been
like, oh, the Bozeman. That's right.
Yeah, you disappeared 80 years ago. I got Kelsey Grammer. Kirstie Alley was also in Star Trek, and they were both in Cheers together.
Yes,
I think they tried to get her for this episode, and it didn't work. She was supposed to be the person standing behind Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, snap. Really? Are you just saying
no,
things?
I totally read that.
That's rad.
You're reading and shit.
You just reading. You know that?
I got it on Wikipedia.
That anomaly was 20,000 kilometers away. Things look a lot closer in space.
That's the great thing about space.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about...
truer words.
Yeah.
Never spoken.
So when the Enterprise blows up, it's always funny to look at miniatures, what you know as a miniature is exploding, because it always...
And that's the one thing they really did repeat. That was the same footage.
Yeah.
Because that's some expensive shit.
Yeah, it's fucked up. I remember hearing about how it's expensive to separate the dish section. I was at a Star Trek convention. They were saying it's really... You wouldn't think so, but it's really expensive. But when things blow up, these miniatures blow up, because it doesn't look right, because big things explode more slowly. I mean, not obviously not, they're going the same velocity, but because of their size, like, you know, have you ever seen, you know, for example, rain in the distance, it's just like on the
it
horizon.
It just looks still.
It just looks like this still cloud, but there's all the shit happening there. If you ever imagine, like, imagine a giant walking across on the horizon, it wouldn't look like you or me walking. Things, just the way things are, they move more slowly.
Another example is waterfalls. If you've it's one of the trippiest things. If you've never seen a waterfall from far away, it's bizarre, because you look at it and it looks like it's fucking still. Mm-hmm. But if you like kind of blink your eyes and then open your eyes, you can tell the water has changed, but there's something about it being so far away that like your eyes don't really register it.
Right. And so that's why if miniatures look funny, because they're moving at this fast sort of speed. If you ever watch Enterprise and you see, there's one that I remember in particular where they land on some kind of computer manned. There weren't any humans on board, but it was some kind of space station that fixed their ship.
That's a good episode.
Yeah, it is a good episode. But if you notice, they had this claw thing that looked like, you know, the claw, sort of kind of like the claw you get in a claw machine.
Yeah.
Except a little different. But the way it was moving to grab things, it moved too quickly. It was moving too sprightly, too fast, because it's like, this thing's supposed to be big. It's not moving like it's the size of my arm. It shouldn't be anyways. Mm-hmm. So Enterprise, I've
actually... claw machine does not move sprightly.
Claw machine. I noticed that happened a lot with Enterprise.
Well, there's another example in this episode, which is fire is really hard to do, and fire is a lot better in movies now. Both fire and water are better in movies now because they've sorted out the CGI algorithms. Because the problem before is that when you shoot fire small and
shoot fire small
fire bad and you but you shoot fire small sorry, it does sound ridiculous. You know what I'm saying there, right?
Yeah,
and then you blow it up. And so there's a scene where right before the ship is blowing up, where like on the right side, there's like flames engulfing the set. And you can tell that they are small flames that have been blown up and superimposed, because fire does not scale. Water and fire do not scale. Mm. You can't shoot them small and then blow them up. It looks stupid. It's one of the reasons why when they filmed Titanic, James Cameron had to build, he built like a 2/3 size replica of the Titanic, because some of the stuff, it just wouldn't look right otherwise. He understood that, and it was for the veracity of the film, it was worth building that large of a structure in order to avoid the comical look of water that's been kind of blown up.
I remember some kind of old King Kong movie I saw. It wasn't the... I don't think it was the original. It's been a while since I've seen any of them, but he was like, I have this vivid memory. I think it was King Kong, where he was pushing on the top of this boat and like it was pushing it around and trying to push it under, but it wouldn't go under because it was floating, and it looked really weird. That's just a supporting statement to what you said.
Because water don't scale, fire don't scale.
I noticed that part when you were talking about that. I remember looking at that fire, and I looked at it a few times because I thought it looked cool, but it also looked kind of like...
It's a big problem. Yeah. It was a big problem in special effects, and you hear that a lot because, you know, a lot of movies call for fire, and it's really, really fucking difficult to scale fire either up or down. It just doesn't quite look appropriate.
What were you saying when you scale fire small, or what were you saying?
Shoot fire small.
Shoot fire small.
Shoot fire big.
Shoot fire big.
It'll be the name small of our next album.
I'm shooting fire big today.
Shoot fire small.
I like that. I'm shooting fire big.
All right, we had one other. There was one other Facebook comment, and I wanted to get your reaction because this was a little bit of it from a different flavor. Richard Johnson said, "Time loop episodes are such BS. They're just an excuse to film like 5 minutes of footage and replay it over and over again with slight differences." So first of all, I think there's a fundamental problem with his statement, because he's saying show 5 minutes of footage, replay it over and over again, but with slight differences. So you're not, it's not the same 5 minutes of footage.
Right. Hmm.
Secondly, that's not what they do in this episode. As we talked about extensively earlier, Jonathan Frakes, who directed it, went out of his way to kind of film these scenes in increasingly different and more unsettling visual angles and things. And he, and as Jesse noted, he in fact complained about sort of, there was the difficulty of kind of doing these over and over again, slightly differently.
Right, yeah, to sort of make it believable to do the same scene over and over, except a little differently.
While also being consistent enough that it makes sense, because it would be problematic if they were just saying completely different shit every time.
Yeah. And I don't know, it's like time travel episodes are just a reason to do that. You know, even if it were true, it's like, time travel episodes have their issues. I get it. It's time travel. It never really makes much sense, but it's, I don't know. They're often Star Trek.
You're going to get Star Trek. You're going to get time travel in Star Trek. Just get over it.
But I'm trying to think of Star Trek.
Superman, what did he go back in time by going around the world a bunch of times?
He spun the world backwards.
Isn't that
been a catastrophe of like untold proportion?
Oh, man. But how did they go back in time in Star Trek 4?
They went around the sun.
They slung. So it wasn't much better. I mean, it was less devastating to the Earth.
It looked cooler.
Because
that Klingon bird of prey.
And they had that Klingon shit.
I suspect that when that person wrote that, they were just had a point. They had one specific point they made, and they hyperbolized it to sort of
I want to give Mr. Johnson the benefit of the doubt, but I have, at least within the confines of Star Trek, I have as of yet been able to come up with an example that would more closely, because it's clearly this episode doesn't qualify for his statement of shooting 5 minutes and repeating it. I'm trying to remember if there was any other Star Trek that they did the same, and I can't really think of any.
I mean, if you want to talk about,
could be other shows, maybe. I mean, maybe he's annoyed by a very special episode of Friends or something.
Yeah, I mean, a clip show is definitely, that's exactly what a clip show is.
But a clip show is a completely different thing,
a completely different thing. So I get the point he's making. Like I said, I think he made one sort of connection and he decided to revolve the whole point around that one connection, which as you said, we can't really think of a good example.
Well, we respect your opinion, Mr. Johnson. Yeah. But would very much appreciate some follow up.
Yeah, I ain't mad at you. It's cool. We all have examples. I believe that opinions are a good thing. So, you know, that's my hot take.
Dan's new thing is talking like Dr. Phlox. And by the way, he's doing it in personal life too. This is not a podcast only thing. Dan has taken to talking like Dr. Phlox, and I, for one, love it.
Not necessarily.
Dr. Phlox kicks ass.
Yeah, he's amazing. Oh, it was Mike was talking about there should be, was it Mike or was it me?
I love
that's
the fact
great, that's
that
a great
can,
question.
You can't tell the difference between yourself and one of our colleagues.
You can have a whole website about that. Mike or me?
I can't remember who said Mike or me. Who was saying it? I think it might have. Well, I don't know.
We should do it. Should be like Tinder, except like it's pictures of our friend Mike and pictures of Dan, and Dan, and we just can watch Dan wrestle with whether to swipe right, left.
Is that me? Is that Mike? Is it Mike?
Pretty funny.
Is it me?
For the audience, Mike and Dan look nothing alike, and are two very different people, and so now we'll let Dan continue with his point, or Mike's point. We're not entirely clear on that yet.
It was something. It was talking about how Phlox and Neelix should have a show together, a TV show together, and it could be like an odd couple kind of thing.
Would it just be Phlox being like? It would drive Phlox to being less optimistic and more nihilistic about the world.
because that would
be the character arc. He would get increasingly frustrated.
See, that would be the funny thing.
Funny.
Is Neelix is obviously the Walter Matthau character, right?
Optimism.
Because he's like the slob and whatever and has that ship full of shit that he has. And Phlox is all like, I've got my stuff together. I've got all these animals and I like them and my face smiles weird. But like Phlox.
We have many wives and we all have sex with lots of people.
That's the thing.
Neelix is fucking like Machiavelli.
So.
It's totally true.
That's the thing about Phlox. So like you said, he's so chill with shit. He's super chill. He's not all uptight. So that would be the funny arc. Like just watch him go slowly insane. To make Phlox go insane, that would be an interesting thing to observe.
All right. Well, we'll send the letters in on behalf of Mike to the producers at CBS All Access and Paramount, whatever. I know CBS All Access, they're changing their name. I don't think they've come up with a new name yet. But
I hope they work it out.
They will.
I want to point out something.
It's going to be called CBS Easy Access.
All right, let's take this. Let's take a vote. People want to vote whether or not Dan can point out this thing he'd like to point out. I vote yes.
Jesse? I vote yes.
All right. Go ahead, Dan.
Wow. It's great, guys, because it had to be a unanimous decision.
It is unanimous.
I vote no.
Oh.
So at the beginning, when they're blowing up for the first time, Ro says inertial dampers.
As opposed to inertial dampeners?
Correct.
I've heard both throughout Star Trek.
Yes, and I pointed this out, actually. I looked at my notes for Star Trek Picard.
Maybe it was, I seem to remember you brought this up.
And it was episode, a dialect.
It was Star Trek Picard Episode 3, Absolute Candor. I pointed this out, that they said dampener.
And I pointed out that Absolut, the makers of the fine vodka, should make a version of vodka called Absolut Condor.
Maybe
it has bits of condor in it.
Oh, yeah.
As like a sly parody to tie it into the show.
So, and this was like a beak.
Maybe she said dampeners. And it,
so I don't remember.
You just didn't hear the nor.
So.
You know what I'm saying.
So, okay, so it was around the scene where Emmett, the tactical hologram, was talking about...
another sexy character.
He was talking about inertial... I think it was him who was talking about inertial dampeners. And I pointed out, I thought it was dampers. And I believe one of you people here said...
He clearly means me in this...
one of us, I wonder.
We can play back the tape, but I remember there was some skepticism. Because I was like, I swear they said dampers at one point.
I think they do say both.
They do. If you look,
I think after that lengthy conversation that we had, I think that we concluded that
I think it's the.
I think it's just how it fits into the dialogue.
Yeah, it is.
It's up to the individual.
Well, it's,
and there's different dialects.
Yeah, I mean, well, in the first season, first couple episodes, you know, and even this happens in a lot of things where they pronounce people's names differently. Yeah. Like it's not consistent. But this one,
Spock's always saying sensors.
Sensors.
Who the fuck says that?
One episode,
Data,
I swear.
Maybe says.
I swear. One episode, Data says nacelle. Instead of nacelle, he says nacelle. I swear,
I believe that.
But
yeah, Data.
I think on the Wikipedia, the fandom wiki or whatever, I think they say that it can be either damper or dampeners. So,
good for them.
So because they said it,
good for
about
them.
Fantasy dampers. Made up shit.
All right, so I do have some comments from the website.
Hell
the
yeah.
website
that I've been saving up.
Sound like you were saying website, but you pronounced it website.
Yeah. I mean, similar.
Website.
So, did you... any other concluding points about this particular episode? Because the comments are not directly related to this episode. So, I want to... let's wrap up cause and effect, and then we can go talk about these other comments.
There was no Whoopi in this episode.
There was no Whoopi.
It was Whoopi-free.
But it was tight. There was no O'Brien.
There was no O'Brien.
There was no O'Brien. Why was there no O'Brien?
And he would have been
no O'Brien.
He would have been in Transporter Room 3!
Yeah, that was his favorite.
Oh, yeah, his favorite. So they sent Deccan transmission.
They call him Colmeany, but by all accounts, he's a sweet guy.
Aw, that's great. They demodulate Deccan transmissions for a post-hypnotic subconscious suggestion for Data.
One of the actors that's been in the most Star Trek.
There was 150
Michael Dorn.
Besides Michael Dorn. Yeah.
There was 150 discussions about ship operations, 252 conversation of a personal nature, and 5 couples...
fucking
basically, yeah. And
Picard was all like,
when
Data,
oh, that reminds me.
ooh,
Car 54, ooh, Gunther Tootie,
ooh,
Tootie,
Car 54. That's a TV show, guys.
It was.
I just said Gunther Tootie, Car 54.
Yeah, I'm talking to the audience, not to you guys.
And people from that show were on the Munsters.
Yeah, Fred Gwynne.
A couple of people, and the other guy that played the grandpa was also.
Oh yeah, you're right.
It was this where when Picard was suggesting when he went along with Crusher's idea, even though he thought she was wrong, he still went with it. He said, "Have Data and Geordi He said,
Geordi.
He was drunk.
He said, "Have Data and Geordi run a ship-wide diagnostic." Data. That's how British people talk. They go Data.
I know British people talk all sorts of.
They add R's at the ends of things.
He's Patrick Stewart.
Data. I hardly knew her.
Oh my gosh! Remember, remember Chris who would say Washington?
Yeah,
wash the car and
wash. You gotta wash your hands.
You know. So I just like that. I thought that was fun. You know. I think it's fun when things happen. You know. It's neat. I like how. How things happen. They should have put up their shields when that ship came out of nowhere, but maybe the shields wouldn't have done anything at that point.
Although they were having some system problems, so I can't remember if they had. Yeah, but you're right. I don't remember them saying like shields up or anything, but
as usual, Troy sensed nothing unusual when they were talking about the readings because she heard lots of voices. Troy's like,
but she did when they got near the time portal thing. She was She was like, oh.
Yeah, we got to get out of here. Once again, a little too late, Troy. It's like looking at the yelling guy and saying you sense anger. You know, that's what she did. But oh, and how old do you think Crusher is in this episode?
Just right.
There we go.
that's my honest, sincere answer. I like Beverly Crusher.
How old was Picard? Did we or Patrick Stewart and all them when they?
Well, he was 47 when he started TNG. Okay. Although I think the character he was playing was intended to be a little older. I think maybe in his 60s or something. Given the, you know, the longer lifespan of humans,
right?
In
because he is 90.
He's 90 something
by the time the Picard show happens.
Yeah.
So, oh, she, according to TV, now Google's TV, she was born in 1949. So right. This means she was 43.
Gates McFadden.
Did you say this was an episode was in 92?
92.
So she's 43.
And a trained dancer.
I'm only 42.
Incorporated into some of those episodes. She's a very good dancer in real life, and I think still is. Yes. All right. So I guess that covers most of the things about this particular
episode. Marina Sirtis was younger than us when this episode.
Yeah. I wonder if Riker was too. He was pretty young when
she was. She was completely extraneous to this episode. She played no part.
Yeah.
There was no detection of like people's like uncertainty about what was going on. There was nothing. There was no Troy.
Yeah.
She was useless.
Like, she wasn't like I detect a neurotic psychiatrist from Seattle. coming through. Oh. All right. So that was Cause and Effect. Classic episode. All sorts of good things going on there. Pretty streamlined and tight. Good episode to introduce people. I do really support that argument because you don't need to know any of these characters, but the characterizations are so high quality in the writing and in the acting, and the story is so kind of laser thin. You know, it's a very simple story, but well told. So it is a great opportunity to get people, you know, into the Star Trek fold and get the vibe whether or not they'd like it, because they don't have to rely on so much of the lore, which is something that I have no doubt prevents some people, you know, who might even have an interest in Star Trek if they're concerned that they can't get into it. There are a lot of access points, and I think this is a really easy access point to throw people in, because they can if they like this, then they can start watching TNG at any point and start digging on.
The only person that depends on lore is himself.
What? Is that a...
Are you talking about the character lore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Data and lore mean the same thing. They're both derivations of a similar concept.
Words.
Collection of information.
Words.
You know, like a collection. You put the information
lore
together.
Lore is a more like primitive kind of thing.
How do hyposprays work?
It's
like that.
Okay.
All right. So we will move along. Start thinking about right now, before I read these comments, I want you all to start thinking about what you might want to talk about next week.
We're going to do a Walks on a Troy episode.
Star Trek related.
No, we're not.
One day we will.
No, we're not. But yes, one day.
You think about, you while I'm going through these comments.
The one where they're like naked through the whole thing?
Yeah, like the mud bath.
Yeah.
And think of a series, think of an episode, and we can discuss that after I do a brief review of some of the comments. So just for background,
we should do another TNG. I think
I'd be for that.
TNG is always good. TNG rules. So on our website, itsgotstartrek.com. That's our website. It's great. It's the name of the podcast. It's also the name of the address for the website. So while we generally solicit comments on Twitter at It's Got Star Trek, or on Facebook, on one of our many posts, you can find us on Facebook at It's Got Star Trek, or even on Instagram at It's Got Star Trek. Make it super convenient for you.
It's and
got
make
Star
it so.
Trek. Everywhere we do that, right? However, on, you know, we post up all these episodes on our website as well, and you have the opportunity to leave a comment. Now, here's the thing. To leave a comment, you have to register and make an account, and then you put your comment in, and then the comment gets sent to a queue for approval, right? The reason this is because the vast majority of comments we get are ridiculous junk comments, but they do sometimes amuse me. So I just wanted to go through some of the comments which have not gone live because they are clearly junk comments, but just to give you a flavor of what I get to review in the comment queue, and which you as audience members could help combat. You could surprise me. You could just brighten my day by leaving a comment, and then I'd look at the queue, and instead of it being like one of these crazy junk messages, it would be like an actual message that was intended for the hosts to be listened to by the fans of the podcast. But anyway, here's what I'm dealing with. This is from a user called Blog3009, who says, "Usually I don't learn article on blogs. However, I wish to say that this write-up very forced me to try and to do so. Your writing style has been surprised me. Thanks. Very nice post."
Breathtaking.
Yeah.
What language was that?
It was English.
just barely.
All right. Here's one. I won't say the username because it's just a website that probably will steal your fucking blood or something.
That's ballsy.
The
website.
The comment is, "First of all, I want to say wonderful blog." It's not a blog. "I had a quick question that I'd like to ask, if you don't mind. I was curious to know how you center yourself and clear your mind before writing." We're not writing anything on this. "I have had a difficult time clearing my thoughts in getting my ideas out there. I truly do enjoy writing. However, it just seems like the first 10 to 15 minutes are usually lost just trying to figure out how to begin. Any ideas or tips? Many thanks." So,
make some strong points.
Clearly a junk spam email that goes to a website that does horrible things to your computer or your body.
Promising you happiness, but really sends you to hell.
But it's a good question. So if you're out there, if you're
personal
a writer.
There's no such thing.
If you're a creative writer, writing reports, whatever. Writing is writing. There's different styles and different things that are going to motivate you. But it is very difficult to stare at the blank page. And though you've probably heard this advice before, I will sort of reiterate the utility of this advice, which is you just got to start writing. Mm-hmm. You start putting stuff
on
there.
Put something out there.
Because you can always fix it, edit it, delete it, write something else. But the act of writing, the act of typing words in is going to start getting things flowing. And sooner, you know, might not be overnight, but you're going to find that very quickly it's going to get easier and easier to write, because once you ingrain that habit that no matter how blank your mind is, if you just start typing shit in, your body will get used to that, your brain will get used to that, and it's going to make the process of writing a little easier. The other thing I recommend is having hard deadlines that will that if you fail to meet those deadlines, that your life will be ruined, right?
That's always the trick, is what's like, I don't make the deadline, what's going to actually
exactly
happen?
So when I'm writing, for example, in grad school or something, or for work, if I'm writing something and say they give me 5 weeks to do it, I do it the night before. And I do that partly because I'm exceedingly lazy, and partly because I have far too much confidence in my own ability, but primarily because the pressure is very motivating. That really helps. So if you're finding that you're trying to do some, say, creative writing, some fanfic or something on the side,
resonance.
You got to create some scenario where if you don't do it, something terrible will happen to you or possibly to a member of your family. Though in my experience, it works better if it's like you that's going to really face the punishment, because even nice people can rationalize bringing, you know, ill health or ill will upon their family members, even those they very, very much love.
You said far too much confidence. That's like fart, poo, touch, butt resonance.
That's exactly
butt resonance. That's yeah.
It's like a butt resonance.
It's a butt resonance. Actually, but to your first point, that's, I mean, those are both solid points, and those are, I feel the same way. The first point, it's true about writing. I get this whenever I'm creating something, there's this sort of unreasonable fear that I know is false, but it still like holds, I mean, I don't want to say it holds me back, but it's still this weird.
It's a barrier.
It's a barrier where I need to remind myself, whatever you make, you can change it. It's not like you made this, that's you, and it's done for, and you got one shot at this. No, you can write out a bunch of shit. Some of it might be good, some of it might be terrible, and guess what? You can go back and change that shit. Now, that seems really obvious. Obviously, that seems obvious.
Well, obviously.
Exactly. It's exactly...
But there's something about, like, if you're writing something, if you're typing something in, then it tricks your mind that it's some sort of permanence, and it's like, right. Okay, it's not in my brain anymore, it's out here, so
right.
You have to fight that natural inclination and be like, well, I can always change it. It's I whatever.
It's exactly. It's like this fear that I'm going to create something and that's the final manifestation of my mind and it's going to turn out that I can't do shit.
And it's going to make me look like a complete lunatic.
It's just if you record a song and it's like, well, that's not, you recorded it. That's just one recording you did. Right. That's not the song. It doesn't have to be the song. You can do another recording.
I think the other aspect,
various versions.
And then to modify. I mean, if it comes out perfect the first time, great. But also,
I'd be suspicious.
Yeah,
because I'm OCD. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So, but the point is not putting out something and therefore it's total shit. No, it's good, and that's how you make it better, and that's how you get that final product of better is making the first ones first. So it's like it's hard to get to that end stage without going through the first ones. These all seem very common sense, but it's something I have to remind my. I have to actively remind myself.
It's a habit for me. It's like, cigarette smoking's bad. It's still a habit that you have to break and reform.
It's so tasty, though.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is the other thing with the creative aspects, as we've talked about before, is people want to create and people should create. Not enough people are out there creating. There's people who have talent out there who are, for a variety of reasons, either prevented from doing it by external reasons or by their own internal whatever. And it would be great if more people could go out there and just do stuff, make stuff, because more people making stuff is cool. And I think one thing that scares
humanity is all about.
Yeah. I think one thing that scares a lot of people is this void. There's this eternal void. You have a creative thing, right? You're like, I want to create something. And then all of a sudden this void opens up in front of you and you feel like you've got to fill this infinite void. It's like that void's not fucking infinite. You're writing a song or a short story or a novel or something. There's constraints on it. Just remind yourself.
You're not the first person to write a song or a short story.
It's you can do it and no one has to see it until you want people to see it or hear it or whatever to consume it. Right. So, get out there. Anyway, so that was a good question. The next comment is from a person named Scoopla Who Dating Who.
No.
And their comment is, it's enormous that you are getting ideas from this paragraph as well as from our discussion made at this place.
That's it?
That's it.
Well,
that's fucked up.
I know. It kind of pisses me off. I prefer the ones that are just straight up like by Cialis
or whatever.
It's very
presumptuous that this discussion we had at this place, and he would just assume that it was enormous.
Yeah.
Assume what? Your penis?
Assume that the paragraph was enormous.
Oh.
What was it?
He was assuming the paragraph was enormous before it was finished or something. It's like, you haven't even said
it yet. How about this one? This one is...
Wait. Yeah, what? That last one was really... That was some existential shit.
It's enormous.
A lot of liberties with the English
language. He said, it's enormous that you are getting ideas from this paragraph as well as from our discussion made at this place. Disturbing.
That is pretty presumptuous too, though.
This other one is good too. What's up, mates? Nice post and pleasant arguments commented at this place. I am in fact enjoying by these.
That's a very positive.
How hard are these people trying?
I think that, I don't know. So
I don't think these are people.
They're bots.
Oh, yeah, but
don't even sound like people who are coming from a different language and mistranslating. It seems like
these are robots who don't know English.
It's like bots putting things together through some kind of a machine learning training models, algorithm, the stuff. Those kinds of whole things, like the subreddit simulator, like and stuff like that. But it's like, couldn't you just at least come up with a few canned messages and send them out? I guess they're trying to shoot for something believable. So you got to give them some respect that they're, you know, you gotta crawl before you can walk, you know, when new technology comes out, it's always shit and it gets
so
better.
So if somebody
by
leaves a comment, we might, in fact, it might not be an actual listener to the podcast. Somebody will be saying like, yeah, I really agree with your points about Beverly Crusher. And we'll be like, oh, is that a bot or not?
Yeah.
And they've become more sophisticated.
That's deep fakes, you know? I mean,
how about this one? I think Dan, you in particular will like this. Nice weblog right here. Additionally, your website lots up very fast. What web host are you using? Can I am getting your associate hyperlink in your host? I wish my site loaded up as fast as yours, LOL.
That last part was the most was the most lucid part of that whole thing, is that last sentence.
All right. Okay. Weblog? No. I know. Yeah. It's hosted on WordPress. Guess what, motherfucker? WordPress hosts a whole variety of different types of things. It's not even hosted on WordPress. I host this shit myself, but I use WordPress as the backbone of the thing, as the content manager. Anyway, so LOL. That was pretty funny.
L-O-fucking-L.
I have read a few excellent stuff here, definitely worth bookmarking for revisiting. I wonder how so much attempt you put to make one of these excellent informative site.
We put a lot of attempt to make some.
Oh, this is okay. We'll end on this one because this is my favorite one. Wow. Just what I was searching for. Came here by searching for reluctant.
Reluctant?
All right. Sorry. Came here by searching for reluctant. I don't know where they're getting from. I even did a search. I don't think we've used the...
That sounds sexual.
We've probably used the word reluctant in a show descriptor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, so that is a review of the spam comments that we've received. We get tons of comments on Facebook. We love that. We get lots of great responses on Twitter.
Feedback.
You know, we get emails straight from people, which is awesome, at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. But yeah, if you're just bored out of your mind, you're trapped in quarantine or whatever, and you want to log on to itsgotstartrek.com, make a little user account. You can have fake email. I don't give a shit. But leave some informative comments about some of the episodes.
Make a nice sentence.
Yeah,
make a couple of nice sentences.
Make a beautiful sentence.
I know you're listening to the podcast. You speak English. You can make a nice sentence.
My family members always say that I am wasting my time here at NET, but I know I am getting experience all the time by reading THES good content.
Hmm.
So it's something. I don't know. As we said, watch
it when you're at the NET.
When you're creating something, you're gonna deal with the sublime aspects of that, which is the act of creating, the act of putting it out there and getting a positive response and feedback. And you're also going to get a bunch of this bullshit.
Feedback.
So that's the other thing about being a content creator is you're going to deal with a great deal of total bullshit. And in the modern age we live in, a lot of the bullshit is coming from fucking robots and algorithms. More advanced even than the algorithms data used to suss out the voices and record the voices from the previous time loops.
Yeah.
Beware of AI. It will be our downfall.
shoot the fire small.
It's just a bunch of
shoot that fire
maybe
small.
Maybe that's my slogan. So we've been trying to, you know, we've
today
got
I'm
our
going to shoot the fire small.
We've got our we've got some graphics together for t-shirts, and if you're interested, let us know. We're ordering some t-shirts now. We've already done our giveaway, so we have 5 people who won free t-shirts. But if you're interested, we'll be selling some t-shirts, so we'll put the graphics up soon. We'll get
you don't have to be a winner. You can just be a consumer.
Yeah, and there's going to be some mugs and stuff. We haven't figured out if we're going to do Patreon or whatever. We'll figure that shit out. But we have a cool graphic for Dan, and we have a cool graphic for Jesse, but we don't have a cool graphic for me because, you know, I'm trying to find something good. Maybe my slogan will be shoot the fire small. That would be fun. All right, so I think that about does it for us. Dan is pulling out the synthesizer, which usually means it's time to go to the second part of the evening, which is where we party down synthesizer style for the next few three or four hours. And then I will wake up early tomorrow morning and edit this for your pleasure to be released in the evening on Saturday.
I'd like to make officially state that I'm not against AI and I'm all for it, just like fucking everything.
Yeah,
you're doing that because
he's Rocco's basilisk.
He wants to go on record because when the AI takes over, yeah, they will know that you're cool.
They
and,
will.
And you will have some sort of insurance that they won't destroy.
He's subverting Rocco's basilisk, and it's a smart strategy, and I wholeheartedly agree.
It's just a bunch of if statements. It's like, you're going to go left.
Else.
It's
if
just
then else, buddy.
It's just, are you going to turn left? You're going to turn right.
Else,
that's all it is. It's just doing that really complicated, like,
yeah, ain't nothing wrong with AI, ain't Rocco and your basilisk.
Like, it's pretty freaky what it can do, though.
Yeah, we're cool with the Rocco's basilisk, so we are 100% pro AI.
So when it traverses that sort of tree-like path, and when it gets to me, I want it to take left, which is don't kill me, versus right, which is kill me. So I have to figure out how
what if it's using some sort of quantum entanglement, so it's not binary.
I am the user.
Because it could be that one of the options is kill, one of the options is don't kill, but there could be a variety of options in between, like, you know, kind of tug a little too hard on your cock, just like a little bit too hard, like uncomfortably too hard, not torture. Not like torture.
Not like pull it off, but just be like, oh.
Yeah, just so you're kind of like, watch it.
Even when AI takes over, we are still just the user. We are the user, and we're using them in such a way that causes them to kill us all.
Yes.
But we are still in control. We just choose to make them kill us.
We've chosen our own demise.
So, I mean, whose fault is that?
I can't disagree with that There's a twisted, horrifying, perverse logic to that statement. All right, so I suppose that will do it for us for this evening. Dan is eager to do some synthesizing while Jesse and I sort of silently and plaintively watch him. So we've already gone over all the social media, but, you know, it's got Star Trek everywhere you need to go. It's got StarTrek.com. Leave some comments. You can get us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. And, you know, you get in touch with us. Have some fun. We're a bunch of fun blokes out here. Jesse and Dan have retired to the making noise section. So I will call it an evening. Oh, and we didn't figure out what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll put it on the social media.
TBA, baby.
TBA, to be announced. It'll be something related to Star Trek, and it'll be full of all sorts of entertainment. So we look forward to talking with you via the internet MP3 audio waves next week. And until then, I hope everyone has a wonderful and creative and, you know, cool, kick-ass.
Be excellent to each other.
Yeah. Bill and Ted, Bill S. Preston. Oh, by the way, real quick, I watched the fourth season of The Expanse, and there's a Bill and Ted joke, because at one point the professor guy is talking to his class, and he's telling them what their homework is, and he's listing some authors they have to read, and like seems like some sort of philosophy or something. And so he names a couple of like normal philosophers, and he was like, and don't forget the worst works of Mr. Preston and Dr. Logan. Bill S. Preston and Ted Theodore Logan. Anyway, that'll do it for us this week. We will talk to you next week. And until then, goodbye.
Boop. Caught in an endless time loop.
We could have been trapped here for hours, days, maybe years.
Unable to remember the past.
How did it happen? How did we get there?
A starship collision lies dead ahead.
We have to get out of here now.
Can the crew escape their own destiny?
Casualty reports coming in from all over the ship.
Or will time tick towards their final hour?
All hands abandon ship!
On Star Trek: The Next Generation.